Hello, this is Andy from Retro Asylum. This is a pre-announcement to the main podcast. Now, I just want to cover a few things I want to explain before we move on to the main podcast. And the podcast we are going to talk about is our journey to Play Expo, which was a couple of weekends ago. We had a great time. We went down there on the Saturday. But before I go on to about that, let me quickly thank our sponsors. I want to thank Adino Dini. I want to thank Michael. I want to thank Retro Hunter, Phil, Doug, and Primal Scientist. And if you would like to donate to our podcast, please go to www.retroasylum.com. There's a little PayPal button, and donate whatever you can. Every little bit helps. We don't make any money from this show, and you know, every little bit helps. So right, let's talk a little bit about the podcast. Now, first of all, guys, the podcast that I will be playing in a few moments, it's not the best quality. Reason being is I recorded it off my iPhone with a microphone, and we recorded it on the car on the way to Play Expo. So you've got to understand it's not up to a normal quality audio-wise. But you know what? Nevertheless, I think the content's still pretty good. I mean, there are times where one of us is slightly further away, and normally what I do, I levelate the sound, which makes the other person slightly higher. But it's kind of hard to do in this occasion, because if I levelate it and make it higher, it brings up their background noise a little bit more. So, you know, please bear with us, guys. And again, we did an amazing interview with Retro Gamer Daz at the Play Expo. But once again, because it was so loud and hectic down there, it really drowned out our audio. So again, guys, this podcast was a bit different. We recorded this on the journey down there. Like I said, it was me, it was Ali, the Retro Hunter, then finally we picked up Dean, and it's our journey down to Play Expo, and we cover a little bit about on the way back. And the way I see it is, you will be that fourth person in the car, you will join in that experience with us. And one more thing I want to mention before I go into the main podcast, guys, is we've got rid of the half episode, so there's no more 53 and a half or anything like that. We're going straight from 53 to episode 54. And the reason being is there's no point in us doing these half episodes, because, you know, the half episodes have turned out pretty long now. So we might as well just mix up a little bit in every episode to keep it fresh and alive and keep them going. So, guys, I hope you enjoy this as much as we enjoyed recording it. And thanks very much to everyone we met there as well. Enjoy. This is Andy from Retro Asylum, and joining me today is Ali, the Retro Hunter. Now, basically, we're on a little road trip to Play Expo. It's about, what time is it? 5:27 in the morning. We're on our way to pick up Dean, aka Swainy. How are you doing, mate? You're right, Ali?
I'm tired, but I'm alright.
Yeah, we're both really, really tired. It's an early start for us. We've been travelling all the way up to Manchester. And my god, it's really, really dark here, but that's how dedicated we are to the cause. So, do you know where you're going, Ali?
Not really.
No?
I'm following faithful sat-nav in the pitch black.
Right, I know this is going to be kind of hard. You're following sat-nav, and we're going to talk a little bit about games. Now, this is going to be like a special type of podcast. What we're going to do, we're literally going to sort of just do it on the fly. We're going to sort of record on the journey down to Play Expo. And then we're going to do a little bit of a podcast down there, and then we're going to record our views on the way back. So to start things off with, mate, why don't you tell us a little bit about Eurogamer?
Yeah, no, Eurogamer was a really, really good couple of days that I went to. On the first day, I met up with some Retro Asylum community members. One of those was Rob Ty. He managed to find me when I was doing one of my Find Me to Win a Games, so that was really good. I mean, the day started off, I went straight to the replay area to see all the retro games going on. Got talking to some of the guys that were organising that, had a few pictures taken with some old machines. It was really, really good.
Now, the reason why we're talking a little bit about Eurogamer is because there's a replay area there, and Replay are the company that are doing Play Expo. So why don't you let us know a little bit about replay area down there at Eurogame. What was that like?
No, it was excellent. It had a whole range of machines there. It had a lot of the old computer-based machines. There was Acorn Atoms, I think I played a couple of games on. They had a whole load of consoles, including the Neo Geo AES. They also, which was really good, they had a couple of banks of machines where people were playing multiplayer. So people were playing games like Super Smash Brothers, Mario Kart 64, and on the Friday I played Holy Call, Paul Davis, on a game of Power Stone on the Dreamcast, which is a really, really good multiplayer game that I'd never played before.
Now that's a game that I really want to get for my Dreamcast. I mean, how much does that go for on eBay?
I haven't got a clue, because I meant to do a bit of research on it after the event, but I haven't actually got around to looking it up yet. But from what Holy Call said, it's not a particularly expensive game. It's not one of the, 40, 50 quid ones, so it should be quite affordable.
I think what I'll do then, I'll add that to my collection. Now, I did see photos of you tweeting at Eurogamer, and I did notice there was quite a few people wearing Retro Asylum t-shirts.
Yeah, we spotted a few in the end. Yeah, I think the award must go to our listener at Harmut, I think it is, on Twitter, because he showed some real dedication in getting there and showing off his Retro Asylum t-shirt. I mean, he and his son and I think and a friend took an overnight coach from Plymouth, 7 hours overnight, to get there for the Eurogamer. And if that's not dedication, I don't know what is.
Now, that's completely, totally amazing. Now, we're going to sort of, keep it brief. Now, what we're doing now, we're on the way to pick up Swainy. We're probably, about, 15-something minutes away, something like that. So far, the day's been a bit weird. I haven't got any money in my bank account, and because I asked my wife to put money in my bank, because we've got a joint bank account, and I asked her to put some money into my personal bank account, and she's completely forgotten. So, not a great start to the morning. I'm shattered because I got in about 2 o'clock in the morning. Ali picked me up about just after 5, and it's a good thing he texted me because I was half asleep and I forgot to set my alarm. So, how are you feeling, mate, apart from being tired?
I'm not too bad, I'm not too bad. I tried to have an early night, but the rain and the weather kind of woke me up, and I think half the excitement kind of woke me up about today. I swear I was also in the middle of a dream where I found an arcade machine in a charity shop.
So, did you buy it then in your dream?
I think I was just about to, and then I think I woke up.
Oh man, that would be the dream. Just walk in then, it's like, how much for this? £1.
Exactly, that'd be fantastic.
Alright guys, we'll be back in a second once you've picked up Dean Swain. See you all in a bit. Right, so here we are back again, still in the car on the way to Play Expo. This is Andy Godoy, and joining us this time is Dean Swain. How you doing, mate?
I'm alive and well at this silly time in the morning.
So what time is it, guys? Let's have a little look. The time is 6:36. We set off around 5 o'clock. Ali must have set off a little bit earlier to come and collect me. It's going to take us a good nearly 4 hours to travel up the way to Manchester. But we're looking forward to it. We're enthusiastic. Dean, why don't you tell us your views? I mean, what you're expecting about this event?
Well, I'm kind of hoping that it's not more of the same, because we've been to this now. I think this is the fourth year running, is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Right, so yeah, the first couple of years it felt very similar. Last year there was a big shake-up because they brought in a lot more of a modern approach to it. A lot of Xboxes, all the current-gen machines were there, and there was a very big group of people who were there solely for that. The retro section seemed to me to be a bit of an afterthought. I'm hoping that's not the case this year.
Well, I've seen the show plans, and again, it's going to be very similar to that, Dean. What it's going to have is going to have a large modern era. And I think especially this year, it will have the PS4 there. So I think we're going to have a large crowd of modern gamers. But to be honest with you, in the long run, we're all gamers from different generations. And it's nice that modern gamers will get to experience the retro side. Because from my experience, you get a lot of younger kids that are modern gamers that looking forward to playing on these classic retro games. They're stunned by the arcade machines.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of, we've mentioned it before on the podcast when we've been at these events before. A lot of the young kids do seem to really enjoy the retro games, but it's your 20-year-olds, you know, the people in their mid-20s who'll be queuing up for, like say, the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Good luck to them. Let them stay in the queues. Let me play some retro games.
Right, that's exactly the way I'm thinking about it as well. I mean, the PS4 is going to be there, the Oculus Rift. Now, I'm not going to actually take the time to queue up to see these things because it's going to be ram-packed. I'm going to sit around and play the arcades. I'm going to sit around and play the old retro consoles. So what console or what machine are you looking forward to playing, Dean?
I want to try and get on the PC Engine a bit more this year because it's a console I've never really had the chance or the opportunity to sit down and play properly. So I'd like to give that a try. Other than that, I'll just be jumping on some old classic arcade games, I think. Hopefully Chase HQ will be there and it'll be working. I'd like to try and clock that in front of everyone so people realise I can actually play at least one game. Because I normally get my arse whipped at these sort of things. You know, at retro events, there's always Street Fighter 2, which I'm abysmal at. You know, all the fighting games, Mario Kart, I am absolutely rubbish at, and it gets a bit embarrassing.
Well, I mean, me personally, this time, what I'm looking forward to, and I always seem to avoid it every year, what I will be looking forward to is playing some pinball games. Now, for pinball, I've never been a huge fan of, but everyone talks about it really highly, talking about how all the pinball machines are different. And I've decided that this year, I'm going to concentrate on playing quite a bit of pinball, because, you know, some of the arcades, they did have pinball. It was larger in America than it was over here. But I think I'm going to give it a go just to experience that sort of feeling and just see how different the machines are because I think they've got a large selection. What about yourself, Ali?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing on some of the arcade machines, actually. Yeah, I'm with Dean on that. That's what there was a lack of at Eurogamer, to be fair, because at previous Eurogamers, I had a whole load of arcade machines there, you know, on free play. But this year, there was only kind of four or five, and I think they were all done by a company that was kind of advertising them, you know, the custom built ones, etc. So I'm looking forward to a good variety of arcade machines and just really having a look down and see which one takes my fancy.
Alright then, guys, so once again, I'd just like to remind everyone that we're recording this on the fly. It's completely raw. I will try and edit it a little bit, but we're recording this on the car that Ali's driving on the way down to Play Expo. So I think the next thing we're going to talk about is a particular game. I want to talk about Double Dragon 2, Dean. Now, Double Dragon 2, I put up a thread on the forum. Was Double Dragon 2 a bad sequel? What's your view on that?
My view is that it's not really a sequel, it's more of a remake, although story-wise it is a sequel because Marion gets shot and killed at the beginning rather than just punched in the stomach and carted off to the enemy's lair. I think it was a lazy sequel. In fact, I don't think the game plays as well as the original, although it's more or less based on the original's level design. Apart from the last level, game is more or less the same, and yeah, it's got some nice music, but you know, there's just the enemy sprites are redrawn to look slightly different to make a few new characters, a few palette swaps, a few extra moves, but yeah, to me it was a disappointment. And they'd gone back, I think the major change for a lot of people was the control method. They'd gone back to the Renegade controls where you had attack left, attack right and jump, whereas on the original game you had kick and punch as separate buttons. So no matter what way your character was facing, you could press punch and it would punch no matter what. On Double Dragon 2, if you was facing left and you press punch and then turn around to the face to right and then press punch, it became a back kick. The one thing they did improve was that the elbow smash wasn't as easily, you couldn't clock the game just using that move. It became a lot more harder. So the difficulty level was probably set at the right pace, but yeah, it didn't capture the magic of the first game.
Now, I was thinking exactly what you said, Dean, but after listening to that music on the last podcast, I thought the soundtrack is actually pretty good. The music is pretty fantastic. It's really, really catchy. It's not quite as memorable as the first game, but it's still pretty good. So that got me thinking, why don't I try this game again? Because originally, I was a little bit underwhelmed. I thought, it's not as good as the first one because it was so similar. I was expecting something more grand, and this game wasn't. But playing it again, I realised it's really not that bad. It's just like playing the same game again. And like you said, it feels like it's been reskins. But is it really a bad game, though?
No, I don't think it's a bad game. If you'd played that originally before Double Dragon 1, you'd get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And you know, a lot of, especially the American guys, they'll remember Double Dragon 2 being on the NES. And that is a great game in its own right. And again, like you say about the music, it was by the same composer, some very catchy tunes, especially the first level. The weird thing I didn't like about it was on the last level, and this is a bit of a spoiler for anyone who hasn't played it, but you know, it's a 30 odd year old game now. Maybe not 30 years, but nearly. Was, you know, when you finished the game, you then had to fight a shadow of yourself, which could fire lasers out of its eyes, and that part of the game was very, very unfair. Very, very hard to beat, especially on one credit. Nearly impossible.
Do you reckon then that ruined the game a little bit because it brought a little bit of spiritual, magical element to it, whereas the game, original game, was just basically your girlfriend gets kidnapped and you're out there on the streets trying to fight the gangs who fought her?
I guess, yeah, for me, I preferred, not that it was a realistic game, the first one, you know, you had guys punching walls through and stuff, but yeah, it was fairly just a gritty beat-em-up where, you're quite right, the sequel, it went a bit magical and mystical, but I think, you know, it was actually the gameplay element of the last section, like I said, with the shadows that you're fighting, it was unfair, and that to me is just being a bit cheap just to try and get people to put in a few extra coins, you know, just to try and make a bit of extra money at the end of the game. What I will say though is it's a much better game than Double Dragon 3, which was a really, really crappy sequel.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Double Dragon 3 wasn't the greatest game. You mentioned Double Dragon 2 on the NES. Now that is a fantastic game. Now I was thinking that if that had got released as an arcade game with a Double Dragon, you know, arcade style graphics, that would have been quality. I would have been more than happy with that. You know, it would have taken the gameplay slightly different, you know, given different elements, and it would have felt different. But overall, I thought Double Dragon 2 felt too similar, too familiar to the first game. It just felt like deja vu and not like a real sequel. So anyway, guys, we're going to round this section up. What we'll do now, we'll play a little bit of music. Let's have a little request then. Dean, what do you want to play?
Oh, blimey, you put me right on the spot.
Turbo Outrun, perhaps?
Yeah, Turbo Outrun.
Right, and any particular system?
ZX Spectrum, 128K.
Right, so we're going to play a bit of music from Turbo Outrun on the ZX Spectrum. Enjoy, guys. Right, so we're back again. We've just finished having our breakfast and we're about halfway to arrive at Play Expo. Once again, I'm joined in the car by Ali, the retro hunter, who's doing the driving, and Dean Swain, who's reading Retro Gaming Magazine. How are you finding that, mate? What have you got there? Ninja Golf?
Ninja Golf, a classic 7800 Atari game. And just want to say hello to my mate Darren Jones, you know, the guy who I put on the top spot editing the magazine, all down to me of course, and he will admit that he knows I'm only joking.
Yeah, we have talked about that, Dean. You'd like to remind us quite a lot about that. So tell us a little bit about a quick skim through Retro Gamer Magazine. So what's Retro Gamer Magazine got this month for us, then?
This month, well, the main feature is the remake of the Zelda game, The Wind Waker, which I have absolutely zero interest in. There's an essential Atari 7800 basically a feature on that. Some of the games that fail to make a big impact. And the actual system is self-flopped. Great system, though. What else have we got? Braybrook's first game. Andrew Braybrook's games. I've not really read it yet. This is actually Ali's magazine, and I've just nicked it off of him while he's driving, so I've not had time to have a proper flick through just yet. There is a feature on compilations, which, as an old-time 8-bit user, I have fond memories of, so that looks like it's well worth a read. Yeah, it looks like a good issue. Again, they all are, really.
Yeah, I mean, Retro Gamer is the retro gaming magazine. If you're into retro games, check it out if you haven't already. And if you're into, sort of, if you are into it, just buy it again if you haven't this month already. Once again, I'm having a quick skim through it while Dean flicks through the pages, and it looks just as amazing as ever. So anyway, like I said before, guys, we're on our way down to Play Expo. We're about halfway there. What we will be doing throughout the day is sending tweets. Now, this will come out on Friday, so this has probably happened. We will be giving away Retro Asylum t-shirts, so congratulations to the winners in advance. And I think the way we'll be doing it is we'll be tweeting on the day, and people who reply and find us on the day, we'll give them a Retro Asylum t-shirt. So we're really looking forward to meeting our listeners and our community. Can't wait to sort of hang out with you guys. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Oh, and the other thing as well, this month we'll be giving away the Game Boy. And you can enter this by going to Twitter or Facebook or the Retro Asylum site and complete the sentence, "I want to win the Game Boy because..." And it's as simple as that. On Twitter, please put hashtag Retro Asylum Podcast, and it's as easy as that. Alright guys, we'll catch up with you a little bit later on, further on when we arrive at Play Expo. Again, we're back. We're still on the way down to Play Expo. If I do sound tired, it's because I am. You know, I really am looking forward to it, honestly, guys. I've just completely shattered, had 2 hours sleep. So to keep the podcast a little bit interesting, what we're going to try and do, we've got a new series on the podcast, a new section called 10 Retro Gaming Facts About You. I did nick this from another podcast called The Monkey Chunk Show, so check them out. But anyway, we've got it retro gaming related, and so Dean, we're going to go for Mikey J's 10 Retro Gaming Facts. I'm going to pick three random ones from the 10 things that he's mentioned. Let's go for number 10.
Number 10, right, okay. I hired a convertible in LA on my honeymoon with my wife and drove up the Pacific Highway with the Outrun music blaring through the stereo.
Now, when you say I, you mean Mikey?
Yes, not me. Yeah. I've never been to LA with his wife. Not yet. Anyway.
How cool is that, though? It's sort of like driving around in the States in a convertible with playing the Outrun music. That's just amazing.
That is pretty cool. I think the only one way you could go any further than that is maybe chase HQ, call your wife Nancy, and stick a siren on the roof.
All right, then. So we've picked number 10. Let's go for Ali. Pick us a number, mate.
Number 7.
Number 7 Ali's gone for.
Right, okay, so my first ever digital art was a picture of Renegade on the Speccy 48K using the graphics mode of the number keys. That must have been interesting.
Alright, so why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because it's really difficult from what I'm aware to do art on the ZX Spectrum, especially using the number key. So how on earth did he do it?
Well, did it use a defined... Is it user-defined graphics? I can't remember the term. I mean, actually drawing on the Spectrum on an art package isn't a problem at all, apart from the colour. You know, you've got to work how the colour works. But actually drawing it in basic using that method would have been very awkward. I'd love to see how it actually looks.
Yeah, I'm curious if he's got any of that work left over. Would love to see it on the forum. All right, let's ask Ali for another random number.
Number three. Just make sure I'm on the right section still. Right, it says, I have probably spent more hours playing Elite than I have playing all other games combined.
Right, so were you a fan of Elite then, Al?
No, I've never really got into Elite. I did play Frontier, which was the sequel on the Amiga. I was never any good at it because I was always trying to do dogfights and make it a bit more exciting. Don't get me wrong, it's a very in-depth game and it's very playable, but I find it a bit too slow-paced for my liking.
Yeah, I think it's one of those desert island discs, though, that if you're stuck on a desert island, it's one of the games that you could play forever because it's so grand in the scale. And there's a second one, Elite Dangerous, well, a third one, I should say, that's also out on the Oculus Rift. It's meant to be coming out. Ali, do you have any experience of Elite?
I think it's one of those games that I think I watched my brother play for a lot. I recognise the logo, and I don't even remember the logo to the second one, seeing it quite a lot, but I can't recall ever playing it myself.
Okay, I played it as a youngster. It was a bit complicated for me, but again, if I had the free time, I'd probably invest quite a bit of time, and I know it's really, really big. It's a great game. I just need the time to play it. All right, so let's move on to the next one then, Dean. We're going to move on to Uniforex.
Okay.
Right, so, let's ask Ali to pick a number again.
Number six.
Not knowing any retro collectors or fans at the time, I collected in the 90s / early noughties and threw everything out. Still feeling the pain now.
Right, that's a horrible feeling. Have you actually ever done that, Dean, at any point?
No, I never have, but I do remember Uniforex mentioning this. I think everything he had ended up on the skip. And actually, recently, Darren Jones from Retro Gamer magazine was telling me that his wife threw out his Amstrad onto a skip too. How that didn't end in divorce, I do not know.
That's got to hurt. That's absolutely got to hurt. Has that ever happened to you, Ali? Have you ever got rid of your collection?
Not personally, but the stuff we had as kids, down the years and stuff I now cannot find makes me kind of shudder. We had the old grandstand machines, we had Game & Watches, we had Tomytronics, all those kind of things. We also even had a Vectrex, and I always thought they were buried somewhere in my mum and dad's garage and we were going to find them one day, but when we recently cleared it out, unfortunately we didn't find any of it, which means my mother either sold it at a car boot sale years ago or threw it all out. Painful.
That's got to hurt. I've got rid of my consoles to fun going out, drinking as a youngster, going out and stuff, but, all right, so let's go on to the next number from Uniforex. Let me pick one. I'm going to go for number three.
I prefer late 70s / 80s things like Galaxian's Phoenix or where it's at. Sorry, I'm trying to read in the car, I'm going to bump all over the place. But I do love early 90s Amiga / Mega Drive games too.
All right, so what's your view on that then, Dean?
I agree with him. I'm probably more into the 80s stuff than I am the mid-90s, early 90s, mid-90s console stuff. I started gaming probably when I was about 5 or 6 years old, Binatone, the handheld games like Galaxy Invader, which we've mentioned quite a bit recently. Then on to the Atari 2600. Then I got a computer at ZX Spectrum. I got more into the programming side as well as playing games. Then I moved on to an Amiga. So console games for me, the Mega Drive and the SNES, although my friends had them when I was playing the games, I was more into the computer side, which is more of an 80s thing, I guess.
Well, do you think that's more of a case because you're that age, Dean? And then once you reach your later teens, you were sort of going out, doing other things, chasing after girls, drinking or whatever else?
Yeah, probably. There is that to bear in mind. By the early 90s, obviously I was probably 16, 17. You do start going out clubbing and drinking and, your attention turns to the to girls, you know, well, women, not girls, I'm not paedophile.
Fantastic. That's what you call like a wow. All right, so yeah, we'll round this section up, guys, and then what we'll do, we'll come back with maybe a bit of a name the game. So actually, what we'll do to round this bit up, we'll play a bit of music. Let me ask Ali for his choice of music. What choice of music shall we pick to round this section up? Something that gets you in the mood for driving, I guess.
Something that gets me in the mood for driving?
Yeah, so, all right, let me make... Alright then, so yeah, we'll play some, what's it called? Spy Hunter on the arcade then. Alright, enjoy guys. Right guys, we're back again, still on the journey down to Play Expo. What we're going to try and do now is to name the game. So for our listeners who haven't heard this, the way this works is one of us thinks of a game and we try and guess it, and then see if you can guess it before, you know, we actually guess it. The person can only answer a yes or no. They can be kind and give us a little bit of a clue, but since there's three of us this time in the car, we're going to take it in turn. So Dean's going to sort of think of a game, and me and Ali, the Retro Hunter, are going to try and take it in turns to see if we can name the game. Dean, do the thing.
Name the game.
Right, so let me start off first then. Dean, is it an arcade game?
No.
Is it an 8-bit game?
Yes.
Keep going, mate.
Mate,
you're doing really, really good on this. You're going to get it in your first go.
Not too hot on that one, especially. That's what I thought down, but I'll pass over to you, Andy, for a bit.
Right, you said it was an arcade game?
No.
No? Okay, sorry, I'm half asleep.
Platform game.
Platform game.
Time's ticking.
Time's ticking. Well, we've got about 2 hours to go before we reach Manchester. Let's have a little think. Was it done by Codemasters?
No.
Ali?
Did he fall an egg?
No. Would you like a clue?
Yes, please, mate.
It was a film licence.
It was a film licence and it was a platformer. Was it based on one of the Arnold Schwarzenegger games, films?
No.
Batman?
Nope.
I think we'll be here all day.
Right, so like just, another clue.
So just to describe this, so it won't be boring radio, Ali is thinking, I can see his concentration on the rear view mirror, and he's really giving it a good think.
And try not to crash.
Give us another clue then, Dean.
It's close when you said about Arnie. Someone else.
Cobra.
Spot on.
Yes.
I am the cure of the disease of whatever the silly line was.
That's a good impression nevertheless. Right, so that's one down to me. So I've thought of a game. Now the game I've thought, guys, it's going to be a bit of a tough one. So who's going to go first? Can you name the game?
Name the game. Okay, is it a console game?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Did it appear on the home computers?
It didn't.
Is it an arcade conversion?
It is indeed.
Is it a platform game?
It is indeed.
I'm still no closer. I'm rubbish. Is it a 16-bit console game?
No.
32-bit?
Nope.
8-bit?
It is indeed.
Did it appear on the Sega Master System?
It did appear on the Sega Master System.
Is it Wonder Boy?
It's not Wonder Boy. It's not that easy. Ali. So let me refresh that. It's an arcade it's an arcade game, also a Sega Master System game. And it's not Wonder Boy.
And it's a platform game, you said, yeah?
Yep. It's a bit of a tough one, this one. It might make it easier if you guess what company it's from.
Sega?
There we go, it's a Sega game. Go on then, Ali.
Does it involve any Disney characters?
Nope. Dean?
I'm really stumped. I'm just trying to think of Sega platform games other than Wonder Boy on the Sega Master System.
Okay, I'll give you a clue. It's a mid, sort of, late 80s. Arcade game that got converted to the Sega Master System. It's one of the first Master System games around.
Oh, blimey. I really can't think. I might have to give up.
Will it help if I hum the tune?
Yeah.
So maybe one of our listeners could actually guess what it was. And if you want for comedy value, I'll do it once again. All right, I'll give you another little clue.
New Zealand
story. No. I'll describe the game then, guys. I'll describe the game. Now, it's based around sort of one sort of screen. You're a little character and you can shoot things. It's a very basic game. And it's got... Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a simple, one of the first sort of Sega conversions of the Master System. It's nice and simple. I don't want to give too much away, though.
I really can't think of...
Right, do you give up, you guys? Do you give up?
I'm thinking Hang Up on Jack, but...
No. Sega games, they weren't released on the Master System.
I had that game, so I know that music, but I can't play it.
All right, shall I tell you what it is, guys? Right, the game I was thinking is called Teddy Boy.
Never heard of it. You're lying.
It does exist. Teddy Boy is just like really iconic because the music is just so easy and so simple. All right, so Ali is up next. Ali, have you thought of a game?
Yes, I have.
All right, so I'll go first. Is that an arcade game?
No, it wasn't.
Is it an Amiga game?
Was it on the consoles?
It was.
Was it on the Super Nintendo?
It was.
Was it done by Capcom?
It wasn't.
Was it done by Konami?
No.
Is it a beat-em-up?
It's not.
Platform game? Doesn't narrow it down at all because there's so many bloody platforms. Dear, my mind is not with this this morning. I'm not good at this.
Yeah, throw us a clue. Bubsy the Bobcat.
Oh.
I'm on fire.
Yeah.
This is why I am the main man of Retro Asylum. So guys, hopefully you enjoyed that. And like I said, once again guys, we're recording this on the fly, on the way to Play Expo. It's not going to be as well organised as most of our episodes, but you know what? I want you guys to enjoy our journey to Play Expo. What we're going to be doing, we're going to record a little bit once we get to Play Expo, maybe talk to a few people there. And then we're going to tell you a little bit about the event, maybe grab a few interviews, and then we're going to do the same thing on the way back. So this will be out on Friday the following week. So yeah, speak to you guys in a bit. Guys, still we're on the way down to Play Expo. What we've got coming up next is a little Q&A section. We've put out a little Twitter message saying, you know, please send us some QA questions. So let's have a little look and see what the questions that we have got. Right, so the first question on Twitter is, who's that by? It's by Jordan Harling, and he put, whatever happened to the side-scroller shooter? The only ones now seem to be indie bullet hells. I want a new AAA Gradius. So we'll start off with Dean.
Everything went 3D, and publishers didn't want to really make games like that. The last side shooter I played was probably R-Type Delta, was it, on the PlayStation 1?
Yeah.
Good game. Yeah, they just don't seem to be, at least the publisher's perception is that they're not very popular games anymore. It's a shame, I think they're great games, but yeah. Luckily, at least we have got these people, you know, these developers who are still making them. But the big publishers of today don't seem to be that interested.
Yeah, no, it's a real shame because I always found that these sort of shooting games were a real test of game playing skills. You know, how far you could get without losing a life, you know, or without using a continue. All right, so let's put that question towards Ellie then. I mean, what you'll find is there's loads of homebrew games, quality, decent shooter games coming out on the Dreamcast to this day, and they're absolutely amazing, and they still have that feeling of the olden days with really flashy graphics, so definitely check those out. I mean, there are a few indie titles, some of them, you know, are hit and miss, you know, but yeah, they're worth checking out. Right, let's move on to the next question then. Let's have a little look. Who's this by? Right, we've got a message from Sega Galactico, and he put, what is your opinion on the Sky Shark soundtrack?
Well, I've got to admit, Sky Shark, I'm guessing he is Flying Shark, because that's the name of the game over here. I think it's released on the Mega Drive as Sky Shark. I've never actually played that version, and to be honest, the arcade game, I don't remember it having greatest of music. It's not a tune that's ever stuck in my head, so apologies. I only ever really played the ZX Spectrum version, which had title music but no in-game music.
I mean, we briefly played it on YouTube on the Journey Down Now, and if anything, it kind of reminds me of the music from 1943, you know, of the Capcom series. It's just, I wouldn't say it's catchy, it's not really my cup of tea. Let's put this over to Ali. So what's your view on it? Xenon 2, now there's some good music.
Yeah, definitely a classic track. Probably, you know, the game's more well known for the music. The gameplay on that game, I've got to admit, I preferred the first game. The sequel I thought was a bit bland, but the music was very impressive.
Right, so let's move on to the next question. The next question is from Mr. Sid, one of our staff members at the Retro Asylum.
Services there.
Now, unfortunately, we couldn't get to, he couldn't go down to replay, but the question he put out is, what game would you like to see get a remake?
Tough question, because so many of these remakes fail to capture the real feeling of the original game. I don't know, it's such a hard one to answer. Maybe something like Elevator Action? Because the sequel was really different compared to the first game. I'd like to see what else they can do with that franchise. But it's been so long since that was published, you know, it's probably been long forgotten about. I would like to see a remake of School Days. We've talked about it being Office Days. You know,
yeah.
Maybe not so much a remake, but more of a sequel with modern day technology. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm undecided with these remakes, the HD remakes. They don't really do much for me.
All right, me personally, I'm a big fan of actually some of the remakes. It's just nice seeing these games, you know, what the programmers would have originally liked to have done them and, like, bring them up to date with the style of graphics that we have now. One of my favourites, I know it wasn't very popular, was the Splatterhouse remake. And I thought that was a perfect homage to the last, you know, couple of Mega Drive games. It was gory, it was violent, it was simple and basic, but you know what? It stuck to its roots, basically. For me, though, I'd love to see something, maybe Last Ninja, the Last Ninja series. I know there was a remake meant to be happening about, what, 10 years ago that didn't come through on the PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2, I think it was, but I'd love to see sort of like something like a GTA-style Last Ninja style game where the whole city, the whole countryside is yours to explore and you have to do little missions. I think that would be the game I'd like to see. So let's put this out to Ali. What game would you like to see remade? Fantastic. Let's see if we've got any more questions for the time being. If not, we'll round this section up and then we'll speak to you guys in a little bit. Yeah, that's all the questions we've got for now. So guys, we'll continue recording this podcast on a journey down to Play Expo at some point. I think what I'll do now, I want to play some music, and the music I want to play is one of my favorite tracks from F-Zero. I think it's called Big Blue. Well, I can't remember what it's called. I'll just pick some random tracks, guys, so sit back and enjoy.
everyone, this is Andy from Retro Asylum. We're on our way back to Essex from Play Expo. It's been a long, fun retro gaming day. I've lost my voice. Let's have a little word with Ali and get his views on what he thought about Play Expo.
Yeah, no, I thought Play Expo was a really, really good day. The amount of retro gaming consoles that were on the show there absolutely dwarfed those that were available at the Eurogamer Expo. I'd say the retro, console and computer area was at least four times the size of the one at Eurogamer. I don't know how many arcade cabinets there were there, 100 possibly, maybe more.
Absolutely loads.
Yeah, absolutely loads, and some absolute classic arcade cabinets there. There was a Pac-Man, I think, which is the very, very first edition of the Pac-Man cabinets. Some Sunset Riders cabinet there. Chase HQ, which Swainy was putting down some pretty good moves on. Absolutely loads of pinball machines as well. Multiple stores selling different kind of retro gaming related items and new ones, really. Just an amazing, amazing event, really. Lots of the retro gaming enthusiasts there. Just fantastic, really.
Okay, cool. Now, what I want to talk about is, guys, is our journey in there, because it was a bit of a cold morning, a bit of a cold start. It took us a while to find the place, but once we got to the event, we realised there was like quite a few different queues. Now, unlike last year, we basically didn't know where we had to go. We got told to go and stand in one queue, and then I looked at the press pass, and it said we had access from 10 o'clock. So then we went and spoke to one of the guys that worked there, which I can't recall his name, and I had to go in there and try and sort out the press passes. So we ended up waiting, say, about 20 minutes, I believe. But once we sorted out our press passes, we gained a little bit of early access. And again, like Ali said, it was big, big event, loads of arcade machines, loads of classic games. It was a little bit overwhelming, actually, but what they had this time as well was quite a few retro gaming stores, and one of the first ones we came across was a Console Passion. Is that the name of it?
Console Passion.
So, I mean, what did you think of Console Passion and the prices and variation of selection of games they had?
Yeah, I mean, Console Passion was the very first store we came across, and to be honest, I was pretty impressed with their prices, to be honest. I was expecting them to be more expensive. I mean, they were selling things like the Atari Jaguar boxed for £60, which is cheaper than eBay and the like. They had a whole range of consoles, Mega Drives, Super Nintendos. They also had a whole load of unboxed consoles, about three or four different types of PC engines. They had Neo Geo AESs there. They had boxed Neo Geo CD machines. They had boxed consoles of every description, really. If you wanted a boxed console, then you could have basically bought it from Console Passion. And in terms of the games as well, they were pretty reasonably priced as well. They had the more rarer games as well. They had them in a separate cabinet. They had the more common kind of generic games all out on big stands, and the rarer games and the smaller kind of handheld units were in kind of glass cabinets. But yeah, I was all in all in Console Passion, very good pricing, very, very good.
Alright, so like once we walked past the first part, which was Console Passion, because we were right there basically on the front door, Swainy ran into an old friend, which was a retro gamer Dez. And what we'll do now, we'll play the little interview that Swainy conducted with Darren.
Yep.
Hello,
Mr.
Darren Jones from Retro Gamer.
Nice to meet you yet again.
Yep.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well, thanks.
Yeah, so what are you looking forward to about the event?
Probably, I'm looking forward to the Angry Q-Tip event, but I'm probably just going to hang out with the arcade machines and pinball machines all day.
And the Retro Asylum group.
And of course the Retro Asylum group, but that goes without saying.
And we will be getting you on the show at some point, won't we?
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? We keep on having crossover. But yeah, I'm certainly up for it. We've been talking about how my cruel wife basically took my Amstrad collection ruined it by chucking out a skit.
I'm glad you verified that, because it was mentioned recently on the show, and I don't think everyone quite believes you've done that.
Yeah, well, I didn't do it. it was the missus, but, you know, well, it's say like it, it's one of those things. I was really gutted because my nana bought it for me, and she's 92 now, and I've never wanted to get rid of it, simply because she'd gone for 2 years without condoms, so she could pay for it. And I mentioned it to her about a year ago, and she was like, did I get you that? And obviously, you know, she's 92, so she just couldn't get
it. Alec, if you can grab some pictures, please, mate.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, fantastic.
I've been like sold it, but
I'm just grabbing audio.
Don't come to get a tweet in here.
Very sad story. I think we're all gutted when we heard what happened. So, what else can we talk about?
You can talk about how you helped Darren, you know.
How I helped Darren launch his career and become the most famous
player. To become the international playboy that he is.
As he calls himself, the Lord of Retro.
The Lord of Retro.
Yeah, well again, I mean, when did I first found GameStyle? That was about 11 years ago, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, GameStyle launched in about 1999, I believe.
Yeah.
I was up in space ballpark making that up. It felt like it, anyway, most of the time. Yeah, just to explain to the listeners, GameStyle.com was a website I launched along with a few other people, and we had a retro section, and the head of that retro section was the great man himself. A much better writer than I ever was, and he's obviously done very well for himself in those years.
I lucked out, to be fair, but yeah, because I've been the first review I did for you guys was Game of the Show on Xbox, and then it got to a stage where I'd gone to loads and loads of websites, and they'd all said, oh yeah, we wouldn't mind you writing for us. But you were the only guys who said, oh well, we'll send you a game, and if you like it, you can review it, and then you get to keep it. And I was like, oh well, that sounds alright. And then it went from there. And then I think I took over the admin side, because I was thinking, well, hang on a minute, if I get all the games coming in, then I can decide which are the best ones, and I can keep and review those, and I'll send the others out. And I think one year, we had something like 60 reviews go up in the space of about 6 months. And when I left this site, we had like loads and loads of reviews because we were able to get so much code in it. We had like obviously everybody within the industry knew who it was. And technically, that was a thing that got me the deal when I first started on GamesTM as a news editor. Because I knew so many people in the industry, PR-wise, because of the PR used to do for GameStyle. And then, you know, obviously GameStyle had a retro section. I kind of bullied my way onto that. And I've been obviously doing it ever since.
So there you go. It just goes to show that people who are interested in writing don't have to go to university to start, you know, to work on a magazine. You can start off with the lowest, like me, to work your way up.
I mean, obviously it helps with, like, university and stuff. But, ultimately, I think, If you're passionate about what you believe in, I always joke that I don't write from here, I write from here. And, it sounds corny, but that's what's got me where I am today. So,
I just want to point out that Dan will point into his heart and come into his head.
I'm not making
this is where he writes from.
But
he's got a hard on for gaming.
You know, retro gamer will be 10 years old in January. It was started by obviously Martin Carroll and the guys at Live Publishing. They did something amazingly great, and they launched the Retro Map when everybody thought that it wouldn't work. And you know, it went from I think quarterly to like bi-monthly and then monthly. And then round about issue 19, that's when we took over. We've been obviously doing it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say, although Martin Carroll done a great job starting the magazine, he did pretty much turn it around and made it what it is today.
Well, you know, I don't want to say anything about Martin because he's still freelancing. But we've just made a different magazine. I think one of the things that they did really well was they made it look more like an old magazine.
Yeah.
And you just had the really cool old design layouts and stuff. But when we took it over, we wanted to obviously make it more like a sister companion to GamesTM and make it just modernize it. So I think what they've done was brilliant. But we've obviously took it in a different direction, and it's a direction that seems to keep going down with guys, because you know the magazine, we're now 10 years down the road and it's doing better than ever. So yeah, it's cool.
Well done, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go on,
right. Keep on thanking each other.
Retro phone.
But it's the truth. You know, with you guys giving me my first break, I would not be where I am today. So.
Thank you very much, Darren.
And retro gaming.
Yeah, the most important one. So we're back again and we're heading back to Essex, a couple of hours away. This is the Play Expo episode of the podcast, recorded in the Retro Hunter's car, basically. It's been an interesting podcast. So what I want to talk about now is some of our listeners and some of the community that we met. So let me hand this over to Ali. Who was the first person that we met then, that we saw in the queue? Paul Monaghan?
Yeah, Paul Monaghan, who's in Mog 74 on the forum, I think, of Retro Asylum. He was waiting to us, so yes, he was the first person we saw from the community. He earned a free Retro Asylum t-shirt, which he immediately put on and was very proud to wear. We were very proud to see him wearing it. He came along with his friend Greg as well. I think that he was on Twitter. I think they were the first two community members we saw.
Yep.
I think we saw the others move into the retro. Not sure who they were.
Right, I mean, one of the guys that stopped by me, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sorry about this, is Turbo Nips, and I think his name was Tom. So I had a brief little conversation with Tom. Pleasure meeting him. He came over, said hello. He left us an iTunes review quite a while ago, so he's been a long time listener. So I gave him again a Retro Asylum t-shirt. So who else did we give a Retro Asylum t-shirt to, actually, Ali?
Quite a new listener from the podcast is a long time kind of Twitter friend of mine that I met at Eurogame Expo a couple of weeks back, called Benny 16-Bit Williams, who, when I met him at Eurogame Expo, hadn't listened to us before, so obviously gave him the fire. Said to have a listen, and I think he's been listening ever since.
Yep. I think it's a fantastic experience, actually, sort of getting to meet our listeners, because, you know, it's nice getting feedback, it's nice sort of like getting to meet people that we communicate with on Twitter, and just actually just catching up and just having fun, because, you know, we played games, we had a little wonder, just got to talk about retro gaming stuff. Now, Swain, you met a couple of people as well, didn't you, Dean?
I did, and I've got to apologise for it, because I don't recognise them at first, and it's... what people have got to bear in mind is we're just normal people who've got our everyday jobs, and we go to these events and we kind of treat it like, I'm not going to say minor celebrities. It's, people come up to you and literally out of the crowd and go, "Hi, Swainy, how are you doing?" And it startles you. So I might have come across, hopefully not rude, but probably not quite with it. It's been a tiring day. It's just a bit strange when that does happen, but it's lovely, it's not a bad thing, but it can just take you by surprise.
Alright, that sounds like a little interesting subject to talk about then. So let me ask Ali the same question then. Now you've joined Retro Asylum and you go to events like this, people are starting to recognise you. What does that actually feel like?
It's quite strange actually, because you kind of do these things and you speak to people on Twitter, and your perspective, you're kind of speaking on Twitter, but you don't always understand the impact that you have on others. And I guess I'm the same with certain people that I follow on Twitter, like I saw today, and I was like, "Oh, do you mind if I get a picture of you?" And the same people that have said kind of similar things to me. I find it strange that people ask me for pictures, but then thinking about it, I've asked exactly the same of other people. So it kind of goes both ways. But it's nice to have. It's nice to. For me, I like when you meet someone you've actually spoken to before, etc. It would be really nice if some of the listeners of the podcast would maybe jump on the forums, introduce themselves. But at least then you have a reference point when you meet them at an event as to who they are. And you may know a bit of background about them. But someone comes up to you and go, I listen. I'm not sure what to say. Yeah, thank you very much for listening. Yeah, I really appreciate it. But because you don't know who they are and don't have a kind of background with them, they don't exist on the forum, sometimes it can be a bit of a hard conversation. So I think, if anything, all you listeners out there, please jump on the forums, please introduce yourself, and please say hello. We can have good conversations on the forum.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Ali, because, we've got loads of listeners. We get thousands of downloads, basically, per episode, anywhere between, 1,500 to 2,000 and a bit. And we've got loads of listeners. We know we've got our listeners, and, we've got a certain amount of people in the forum, so don't be afraid. We don't bite. All you have to do is stop by the forum, tell us a little bit about yourself, tell us what you collect, how you came across the podcast, and that way, we're a nice bunch, and we can all sort of, have a nice little retro gaming chit-chat. And it's a nice way of making friends, really, because I found, since doing this podcast now, living in Essex, I've built up like a nice friendship with the local Essex retro gaming community. Now, one of the other things I want to talk about then is Ali got to meet a retro gaming legend and have a nice little interesting chit-chat with him. So, can you tell us who it was you actually met then, Ali?
Yeah, actually, really came about because of another member of, listener of the podcast, really, a guy called,
Press Play on Tape.
Yeah, Press Play on Tape on Twitter, but I don't think I actually got to find out what his real name was, but I think he started listening because he was given a flyer by Ewan Swainy last year.
Yeah.
And that's how he introduced him to the, to the podcast, and he's been listening ever since. And, in fact, it was on our way to meet you guys. I said, do you want to come and meet Andy and Swainy? And he said, yeah, no problem. As we were walking over, we kind of came across Ben Dalgleish.
Yeah.
And he very kindly signed, I think it was a magazine that Press Play and Tape had from back in the day. And I think he took it to a specific page of a piece of music that Ben had done. So he very kindly signed that for him. And of course, I mentioned that we're a retro gaming podcast, and one of our team, Mr. Sid, has been doing a series called My 8-Bit Life, which kind of centres around the game composers of that time. And I said, you're going to be the focus of a future My 8-Bit Life. Would you mind recording a little video message for our Mr. Sid? So very, very kindly and very, very well done. He did a very funny video message that I've sent to Mr. Sid.
And I think what we'll do, we'll play that message now, guys. We'll play this message now. It's a hilarious message. Ben Dalgleish, complete total character, amazing person. So listen to this, guys, and have a laugh with it.
Hello, Mr. Sid. I hear I'm next up on 8-Bit Live. What I want to know is, why the fuck wasn't I first? You got Whittaker in there before me. What the fuck do you think you're doing?
That would be the best thing to do. So what we'll do now then, guys, I want to talk about the highlights of Play Expo. Now, again, it's been a very, very long day. Ali got up, just must have been before 5 in the morning to get down to my place. And, we're on the way back the very same day. So it's been a long day. We all thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. So let's find out the highlights of this evening. We'll start with Dean. Dean's being a little bit quiet at the moment because Dean's driving on the way back. So, Dean, if you can, please tell us what your highlights were of the day, of the evening.
Highlight for me was seeing Darren Jones, who's an old mate of mine, got an interview with him, seeing Ben Dalgleish again, we get to speak to him quite often at these things. We're not best mates with him or anything, but he's always polite, like as you said, he's a character, he really is, and just basically meeting all the listeners of the show, it's great.
Alright, same question to you then, Ellie.
To be honest, I just love seeing the range of all the retro consoles and things like that. I saw some at Eurogamer Expo, but not on this scale. I saw some at Retromania, but again, not on the scale of this. They were literally hundreds of retro machines. Never seen so many retro arcade machines in one place, apart from back in the day. You know, they weren't retro then; they were current. Again, pinball machines. Meeting excellent members of the community like Paul Monahan and his mate Greg. Meeting some random kind of community members as well. Some Twitter legends of mine like Rich Kid Retro, who now listens to the podcast. Big shout out to him. Meeting other members of the team as well. First time I'd ever met Anthony Unifor-X. Meeting Glenn and Damien again, and obviously meeting up with you guys as well. Just a fun film retro jolly day.
Yeah, I mean, I completely second that. I mean, I had a great time. First of all, you know, meeting the team again. We don't meet up as much as we, you know, would like to, because I mean the team's pretty much spread out all around the country. We've got Glenn and Anthony basically based up, you know, up in Yorkshire, and me, Dean and Ali, you know, we're based in Essex, so it's nice when we all get to meet together. And again, it's also nice meeting some of our other friends, you know, people from Retrograde, sorry, I'll start that again, from Retro Game Base, meeting Darren from ABC Star, and loads of other stallholders, and most of all meeting our listeners and community. So I don't know if we've mentioned this already, but did you guys buy anything when you're down there?
Games wise, I ummed and ahed about a few games, but I wouldn't be the retro hunter if I couldn't get it cheaper. And if I buy it all now, then I won't have any fun hunting for it. But no, seriously, there were a few games I had in mind that if I saw and they were a decent price, I was going to pick them up. But a couple of those were on the Super Nintendo. I wanted to find a copy of the Contra 3 box preferably, but I didn't even see a loose part of it, so I couldn't get that. I was also keeping my eyes out for a bit of an obscure Atari 2600 game that I played from back in the day, but seems to have vanished from my collection of all the ones that I've kept over the years. That's a game called Bank Quest.
Right.
But unfortunately, I didn't really come across that. I was tempted by a few other things, but no, I generally kept my hand in my pocket. I got a couple of kind of memorabilia type bits and pieces, but I did pick up some free games for the Retro Collector, so thank you very much, Barry.
Alright, same question to you, Dean. Did you actually buy anything down there?
I only bought one thing, and that was a Sega Saturn pad, which I've probably played over the odds at Santa. Sega Saturn sitting indoors, and I've got a working pad for it, so I'm going to try and get on that tomorrow, so I've decided I'll buy one. But most of my money just went on the extortionate food and drink prices at this event. Unfortunately, you know, all these events, they always charge top back for food and drink, so that's where my money went.
Yeah, sadly it's one of these things. Like, what we'll all have to do next time is take little packed lunch boxes and our little retro gaming packed lunch boxes for next year. But I mean, me personally, I didn't buy anything because I've been a little bit broke this year. But interestingly enough, I did see an Amstrad CPC 464, just a keyboard, and it was going for £50. And going back to the previous podcast, at the car boot sale, the one in Dunton, I bought one for £1. So it was an amazing sort of find, that just finding that contrast between the prices. And I was thinking I could sell my Amstrad for that price, but I'm glad I've actually got that system. And you know, I was on the lookout for other systems there, basically Caveman, Astro Wars. They varied in price between anywhere between about £30 to £50, but I think that I'm going to sort of keep an eye out for car boot sales and see if I can find one of those down there. So I think what we'll start doing, guys, we'll start rounding this up. I want to thank everyone, all our listeners, all our community members, all our sponsors. Thank you very much for all your hard work and support. We need 2 more iTunes reviews now.
to reach 100. Please, please, please try and help us reach that target. It really does help us. I'll sign off by basically telling you my Twitter handle, which is RetroAsylum1. Ali, if you tell people what your handle is.
At the Retro Hunter.
And Dean?
At Dean Swain.
Any thanks, guys?
To everyone. I've had a great day.
Yeah, all community members, everyone from Twitter that we met up with. Apologies for anyone on Twitter that we didn't meet up with, but unfortunately, the signal was not good there. None of us could tweet one thing, so apologies if we missed anyone. Hopefully we'll catch up to you at another one in the future.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.